Welcome to the Coping with COVID podcast series produced by Canyon Rim's community. I'm your host, Nate Gibby. Today's interview was recorded by telephone with Dr. Stephen Morris.
Given the current pandemic of COVID-19 and the subsequent stay-at-home orders and the shutdown of the economy, we're living through unprecedented times. Of course, you know things are crazy when children have to tell their parents to stop sneaking out and kids are asking to go back to school. Of course, after a month and a half of living with quarantine, working from home, trying to avoid getting sick, among other things, it's the current response to the COVID-19 pandemic is beginning to take its toll on all of us. Today, we feature clinical psychologist Steve Morris, a longtime resident of the Canyon Rim neighborhood of Mill Creek, to give us a few pointers in how to deal with current pandemic situation. So welcome, Steve. We're glad to have you today.
Happy to be here.
So, Steve, tell us, first of all, a little bit about your history in the Canyon Rim area, if you don't mind.
Sure. We just passed our 33-year mark in the neighborhood. Moved into this house in 1987, March 22nd, 1987, and here we still are. The house is different, but we're still in the same place. We love it.
And you've raised, is it four children?
Three children. Our oldest
three children.
Our oldest had just turned 11 when we moved here.
And so, Steve, one of the great things about our neighborhood here in Canyon Rim is that we've got quite the diversity of both artistic and professional talents. Of course, yours being a clinical psychologist. You, as a clinical psychologist, have a lot of important insight in how to deal with topics like this and many other things, of course. But before we get into the particulars with COVID-19, would you tell us a little bit about your professional background as a clinical psychologist?
Sure. So my graduate training is from BYU and the University of Utah. I got my PhD at the University of Utah in 1986, worked in hospital settings and clinics for a few years, and then went into private practice in May of 1990. So I'm coming up on 30 years in full-time private practice. I've done a lot of work with the Utah Psychological Association, including a term as president, and I do a lot of work with an organization called, called the International Psychotherapy Institute. It's an organization based in Bethesda, Maryland, and we train therapists of different backgrounds in working from a psychodynamic orientation.
Do you have any particular specialties or types of counseling that?
For many years, I was seen as primarily a child and family person, but probably about, 10, 15 years ago, I stopped seeing kids, and I just work with adults now and couples. And they range a variety of presenting problems. So, but other than that, it's fairly general practice. The garden variety complaints in the mental health field are depression, anxiety, relationship problems, and different subflavors of those constitute the bulk of my practice.
Well, let's shift gears slightly and let's talk about dealing with the current pandemic situation. Of course, there's a lot going on, as we mentioned in the intro, with parents having to keep their kids going on school. Of course, there's the fear of contracting the disease. There are people who have had it and people have lost jobs. Why don't you give us a brief overview, if you don't mind, as to the current state of a lot of people in dealing with the COVID-19 response?
I think it varies. Someone told me today that we're all in the same ocean, but we have different kinds of boats. Some people are doing fine. Their lives haven't changed that much. They have resources. They have jobs that they can do from home. And except for being bored and isolated, they're doing relatively well. We have other people who, of course, are not doing well at all. And in general, there is a ton of anxiety out there. Everybody I see, even the people who are in relatively good situations, are struggling with some level of anxiety. And And part of the problem there, of course, is the uncertainty. We can stand almost anything if we know how long it's going to last, but we don't know. And then people who are already suffering with anxiety add this on top of it, and it can be quite a challenge. I noticed in the paper this morning, I think domestic violence complaints are up. Depending on what numbers you read, somewhere between 25% and 30%. But other kinds of crime are down because nobody's going out. So anyway, it can be hard to be cooped up at home.
And do you have any general pointers about how to deal with this anxiety before we get into some of the specific types or causes of the anxiety?
Yeah, well, good self-care is super important right now. It's always important, but it's really important right now. Our bodies and our minds like routines. And I think a lot of people are struggling because they've allowed their routines to slide. So I find it's important personally, and also for the people I'm working with, that we get up at a certain time, we get exercise, we accomplish something during the day, go to bed at roughly the same time every night, make sure we're taking care of nutrition, that we find ways to stay in touch socially with people, whether it's, you know, driving by or virtually or whatever. And I think it's helpful to limit our exposure to news coverage. When this first happened, it was all that was being reported on pretty much. Now that's tapered down a bit, but I think it's helpful to limit exposure to that. Also, I think it's helpful to have something to look forward to every day, even a small thing. And getting out to the extent we can. There's something very grounding about getting out, walking around in nature. I've actually taken two long walks today, one around the neighborhood this morning, and I took another one down in the gully this evening before dinner. So it helps.
So let's break down the various types of anxiety or stressors that people might experience. And we'll go through various audiences. For example, there are those who are not really worried at all about contracting COVID-19. And there are those for whom it poses quite a threat and could cause a lot of anxiety. Other than, of course, keeping following the instructions of medical counsel, such as washing your hands and maintaining social distancing and wearing a mask. How do we deal with that fear and anxiety of contracting the disease?
Well, first of all, of course, it's important to do the recommended things. And for people who have underlying medical conditions or who are older, it's important to be very careful, very fussy about those things. Apart from that, healthy distractions are very good, whatever those might be for a given person. But in general, there are three main channels for dealing with fear or anxiety. There's the head channel, there's the body channel, and there's the behavior channel. The head channel is where a lot of times when we're anxious, we're telling ourselves things that are distorted or exaggerated, or we're predicting the future or whatever. And if we can identify those distortions and begin to talk sense to ourselves, that helps quiet everything down. So, for example, we might say, what are the actual odds of contracting this? And if I do contract it, what are the odds of getting so sick I have to go to the hospital, and so forth? And numerically, the odds are actually quite low. I'm not going to go out and expose myself, especially at my age, but the odds are actually quite low. The body channel involves a set of practices like deep breathing and meditation, things like that, that can quiet down our physiology so that we're not producing stress hormones and keeping ourselves keyed up all the time. And then the behavior channel is basically where we try to help people face whatever it is they're afraid of. Now, in the case of COVID, we don't want to send people out and expose them, you know, intentionally to risk so that they'll get over feeling afraid of it. But we can do things behaviorally to try to quiet ourselves down, like getting engaged in meaningful projects that take our minds off of it, and exposing ourselves to whatever irrational things are bothering us. So, for example, if we find ourselves irrationally worrying about home invasion or about noises in the night or something like that, we can try to face those fears and reduce them that way. That's kind of vague, but that's a general idea.
Well, thank you for that insight. Let's talk about parents dealing with their kids. As I mentioned earlier, when kids are wanting to go back to school, you know it's crazy in different times. But of course, parents are having a lot thrust upon them because now all of a sudden they're having their kids all around all the time. Feels like a very, almost like a quasi summer break, but you have to make sure that they do their school. Kids are home on top of each other. They want to quarrel and fight. What tips and pointers do you have for parents and kids that are dealing with some of the issues given that they're not in school any longer?
Well, this is a big challenge. Everybody I'm talking to who has children at home is struggling with this, and there's no perfect solution, of course. I think one thing, it's important to be realistic and cut some slack for ourselves and for the kids. We're not going to be able to duplicate school at home. Kids are going to fall behind to some degree. That's pretty much happening to everyone, so I don't know how big a problem that is normatively, but we can only do so much, and we need to try to be flexible. Self-care for the parents is important. I know it's not always possible, but I know of a situation where a parent thought that they had to literally be there 24/7 monitoring everything, and they weren't even getting out for a walk. And one thing we did was, okay, you really need to take 2 breaks a day, and the other parents are going to step in and help during those breaks, et cetera, because the parent needs to make sure that they're taking care of themselves as best they can. But homeschool in the truest sense of the word isn't really going to be possible. Another thing I think that happens is parents and kids can get into an adversarial relationship with each other about, well, are you doing your homework? Are you doing your chores? I don't want to. You have to, blah, blah. And tensions mount and fighting increases. I think if I were in this situation, which I'm not, but if I were, I think what I would try to do is just every so often sit down with the family and just acknowledge how hard it is. I know you hate it. I know I hate it. We're fighting a lot. What can we do to work together to make this easier for all of us? What ideas do we all have? If the kids have some input into decisions about how people are going to spend their time and how their workload is going to be carved up, they're more likely to go along with it. But if they feel like some sort of structure is totally imposed on them, they're more likely to resist it. So trying to eliminate that adversarial stance, I think, is important. And then I think there are motivational things that can be done. You can't always be plying your children with rewards, but, you know, have a general attitude of do X amount of work and then you can do something fun. And, first we work and then we play, but we do play. We do get to reward ourselves for effort and productivity with doing something fun. And don't be afraid to, don't feel bad about that. You know, we all work for rewards. I wouldn't work unless I were getting paid, much as I would like to be able to do that. I have to get paid, and I need to take breaks, and I need to have fun things during my day, and, you know, so do kids. And so those are a few ideas. They're not new. I don't know that there's any magic here, but breaking things down into small bite-sized chunks is really helpful. I think sometimes there's a feeling of, well, let's just power through this. Let's get it over in 4 hours and then we can relax. It might be better to say, okay, we're going to do 30 minutes of, say, math, and then we're going to take a break. We'll come back and do, you know, whatever works. It's harder when kids have difficulties with attention anyway, and keeping those kind of kids busy is a real challenge.
Let's shift gears slightly and let's talk about one other issue, and that's issues of employment. Of course, with the shutdown of the economy, a lot of people have either been furloughed or lost jobs and could be feeling the stressors financially. The government stimulus checks are helpful, but they will only go so far. Do you have any counsel for people who might be facing financial difficulty or employment issues?
Well, I'm certainly no financial advisor, but I think from a psychological standpoint, it's important to face the problem head on, identify where the problem areas are, and do what can be done to try to solve them. You know, people are out of work. Probably nobody's hiring right now, except maybe Amazon. I heard of a young person who got hired by Chick-fil-A recently. They're booming over there. But to try to be proactive about doing what can be done, so things like contacting creditors to see if terms can be arranged, you know, trying to scale back lifestyle, see if any family can help out. Be careful about new debt. I realize that right now people are going to incur some debt as they try to bridge over, you know, a period of unemployment or whatever, but trying to be frugal and prudent about that. That's really all I know to say about that topic. It's a tough one. I think it's the single biggest problem, apart from the fact that, you know, that people are dying. But the unemployment is the single biggest problem.
Last week I heard, I met a guy who had been laid off as a job at a car dealership as a mechanic, an automobile mechanic. And since he lost his job, he's gone into a bit of a funk. He is very depressed, and all he wants to do is play video games all day.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else that you might tell somebody in that situation?
Well, avoidance is very tempting because short-term avoidance is rewarded, right? So if we're experiencing a level of distress and we find a way to avoid the thing that's making us feel distress, then our distress goes down a little bit temporarily, but it does go down a little bit. And that drop in distress is rewarding. And so that behavior, that avoidance behavior, is more likely to get repeated. And so as hard as it may be in the midst of a depression, trying to find a way to get oneself to get up and do something proactive, first thing, do the hardest thing first, and then once something meaningful has been accomplished, then maybe reward oneself with a little bit of distraction. But the problem with that avoidance behavior is that it just makes it worse. So not only am I not solving the problem, but when I come up for air from 3 hours of video gaming, I feel worse about myself than I did before I started. And it just goes down and down and down. Try to avoid avoidance.
So, of course, we hope that soon we'll get out of this particular situation, and that not only will hopefully they come up with a vaccine, but at some point we're likely to come to some sense of semblance of normalcy. Of course, this could be a game changer, similar to how 9/11 was a game changer in many respects. We don't know exactly what that will look like in terms of how we'll function as a society. But do you have any recommendations or suggestions for people as they begin to adapt to the new normal?
Yeah, transitions and change always bring stress, even positive changes. There was a famous study many years ago where people were asked to describe to the researchers what sorts of life events they had been through in the previous 5 years. And then they correlated that with the people's health history, both retrospectively and proactively. And what they found was if you accumulated a certain number of stress points, you were much more likely to develop a physical or a mental health problem. And change all by itself is stressful. So even going on vacation is stressful. Christmas is stressful. So change is stressful, and so we should expect to feel a bit of distress when things change, even when it's a change for the better. So we need to give ourselves permission to adjust gradually. And one thing I think is going to evolve out of this whole situation is. And for all the bad things that are happening, there are also some good things. Families are spending more time together. You know, the air is cleaner. Life is slower and simpler. And I think it's important to try to find ways to hold on to the good parts that we've learned. Another thing that occurred to me today was it might not be a bad idea to memorialize this in some way, like make a scrapbook or make a little video of photos that have been taken during this time as a way to sort of process what's happened and work it through in a way.
Well, thank you for those suggestions, and thank you for your time, Steve. If people would like any additional information, would you recommend any books, or where would you suggest that they turn to learn more about some of these topics and ideas that you've suggested tonight?
There are lots of books in the popular press about managing stress. One of the oldest ones, still a good one, is called The Relaxation Response by Herbert Benson. Talks about how to get our bodies to calm down. Another good one that's focused mainly on panic is called Don't Panic by a psychologist named Reed Wilson. If people need services, it's a bit challenging to find a mental health practitioner, honestly, because many people have full practices, and there are so many out there that it's hard to sort through when you go online to look. So if you're going to look for a therapist, I would say try to find someone that you feel good about. Talk to a few. See how you feel on the phone. The most important aspect of therapy is the working relationship. It needs to be someone you feel comfortable with. And there are certainly therapy helps. Also, in certain cases, I don't like to push medication, but there are some cases where people do need medication to help them recover. And the fastest way to get that is to talk to their family practitioner. Family practitioners and primary care physicians prescribe about 60% of the psychotropic medications, and they have some experience. If it's a complicated case, then you'll want to be referred to a psychiatrist. But for a garden variety depression and anxiety, your family practitioner is a great place to start. Most of these situations aren't going to require medication unless a person had a pre-existing illness, because this is situational. And when the situation changes, the presumption is that our minds will get back to normal. But not in all cases, because depression and anxiety usually are episodes of those tend to be triggered by stressful events.
And are you taking on more patients? And if so, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, I wish I could say yes to that. I have a full practice. I might be able to make referrals. Frankly, most of the people I know well also have full practices. So, but I could at least, if people want to contact me, I could at least give a few suggestions maybe. Easiest way to find me is just look for me online or call my office line, which is 801-485-2362.
Well, thanks very much for your time and your thoughts, Steve. We sure appreciate it. I think it's been very informative and insightful.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
This has been another episode of the Coping with COVID podcast series produced by Canyon Rim is Community.